from across the Volunteer State, the countdown to kickoff with your exclusive scouting report. Welcome to the coaches meeting, coach to coach.
It didn't start well, but it's all in the finish, and the Vols finish off Vanderbilt to put the wraps on a 10-2 regular season.
Well, there's an old saying that's true about a lot of things, but it's a 60-minute ball game, and I think this game really exemplified that, Mac. Early on, 14-0, down 14 in the first 5 minutes. As a matter of fact, well, there's 55 minutes left to play, and a lot of playing time after that. I thought that this team, this staff, but primarily the players on the field, really did a good job of keeping their poise. But, you know, that's what you ought to be able to do. That's where veteran players come in, and there's enough veteran players and younger players on this team. But I thought the big key thing was keeping the poise, knowing that they had a lot of opportunities. We're going to have an opportunity to get back in and win this ball game, and that's the way it worked out.
Well, you know, that, speaking of poise, that's exactly what they showed, Doug. They showed poise, and they played through the 14-0 start pretty quickly. Now, as a fan, which I am, when I'm watching this ball game, I'm a fan, I never really felt any kind of angst or panic that they were in any danger of losing that football game. You just never did. But the start was jarring because of what happened on the kickoff return, and then an immediate turnover in plus territory. But as far as thinking that it was going to end in a bad situation 55 minutes later, I never had that thought.
Yeah, and those last 55 minutes were all Tennessee. And really, the game got back in the game and really got the game under control in that 17-point second quarter. And then the second half came out, took the football, went down on that first drive that we talked so much about, that first 5 minutes, those first two, one offense and one defense, those first two possessions of the second half so key. Tennessee was all over it in the second half and ended up with a pretty comfortable 36-23 win.
Ball's firmly now in the college football playoff as we approach championship weekend. A lot of bragging rights are on the line, a lot of money on the line for the conferences too. Though increasingly you kind of get a sense among some that the championships may not make sense in a playoff era. Again, we're not talking about the money. We're talking about the X's and O's. But I want to put it to Dave and Doug, our committee members here for a second. How should, in your opinion, the committee treat the losers in these championship games?
To get into the championship game, you're either have been the number one team from wins in the conference or number two. You're playing an additional game. How is the loser going to be viewed this year and going forward by the committee? That's the big thing on that. And there's a couple of ways to look at it. Somebody's going to have another loss, but they're also going to play another game. So how that's going to be viewed, and we're going to find that out because, you know, after this week's championship game, the committee's going to have a chance to look at that. We know that there are going to be at least one Power 5 conference that most likely will only have one participant. One of these the leagues will. Southeastern Conference is going to have four. The Big Ten is going to have four. That's pretty plain right now. So how are they going to view that, and will that change over years? Because, again, it's the first time we've been here. We've added eight teams, and there's going to be some discussion at the end on exactly how to factor in the loser of those conference championship games.
And, Doug, if you're in a championship game the way that it's set up now, you've earned the right to be there. And by earning the right to be there, you've won a lot of significant ball games. I think this is something that they're going to have to continue to work through. But when you look at it, it would be hard for me. I'm a committee member right now. If a game was close, it would be hard for me to be punitive and punish the loser in a game that they've won a lot of games to get there.
And I think there's going to be a push. There's some talk about it right now, but there's going to be a push on, do we really need to play these championship games? With the 12-team playoff that, again, is most likely going to expand even to even more numbers in the future.
We'll preview Saturday's action a bit later in this edition of Coach to Coach. We know that anything can happen in a rivalry game, but I'm not sure that many people thought Michigan could beat Ohio State, but, Doug, they did.
Well, they did, and they beat them at Ohio State. That's the other part of that. As we know, not only is this a job for these coaches and the families, it's also a way of life, and it's the way they live. And it's, I tell you, when you get beat, you know, you think about it, you go through and you only have one or two losses. Well, it really depends on who those one or two losses is in big-time college football.
Well, it is a way of life, and everybody that is surrounding you, when you make the choice, and as coaches, we make the choice to get into it. We know the repercussions. The thing that you said, though, about the coaches, even if you move, you're talking about families moving, and it's all predicated on winning. But coaches have an insulation because, as you said, you've got a ready-made place where you go. And then you're insulated. You're working 24/7, basically, you know, on the next game plan, trying to win the ball game. But the residual effects of it are massive. They really are, and you don't know it until you're in it. That's why most coaches, if you look at them, they look like presidents do after their first term. I mean, they've aged about 100 years because it's a lot of stress, and it's not only on them, but it's on family members, and not only just immediate family members, you can get extended family that's very affected by this. So there's much more to it than just a win and a loss.
And of course, there's the whole post game thing from that game and several other games that happened last weekend. You know, it's symbolic, I think, to this look at me world that we live in today. We're planting a flag at midfield. We'll have me on social media. But between that and the whole storming the fields issues, college athletic directors have got to look at these issues. And maybe the thing that could force them to look at it in a serious fashion, because they haven't done so yet, is looking at it from a money perspective. Guys, we're going to see someone get hurt badly. Someone is going to swing a helmet in a fight after somebody's tried to plant a flag, and they're going to hit a staffer in the head with a football helmet. Or someone is going to get trampled in one of these stormings of the field. These things just need to stop.
Well, it has to come from the top. And again, look, let's just go to Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt storms the field because they beat the number one team in the nation at their place. And with the history of non-success that they've had with that, you can see and you can understand that emotion as to why they are doing that. Now, planting the flag, that to me is an entirely different thing. Because you got thousands of fans that are going down there to celebrate the win and something that is a monumental. Now, just storming the field to storm the field has no place in it. So what are you going to do? Are you going to put armed security around the field? But your point about somebody getting hurt, let me just give you an example. Texas A&M always, before the Texas game, used to have a massive bonfire that they would build three stories high. Students would. It was an all-night thing. They built it so high, and it collapsed and killed a student. They don't build the bonfire anymore. They just don't do that. So you don't want a tragedy to be something that makes something a celebratory thing end. If it continues to happen on a regular basis, they've got to do something about it.
Well, it's really two different situations.
Yeah.
One is a celebration with fans coming on the field. There's really nothing you can do about that unless you're going to put fencing up.
Yeah.
Because you got 100,000 fans in some of these places. How many security people are you going to have to put down?
Well, you can put armed guards like they do in soccer games in Europe.
Well, and most of it is students coming on the field. Sure. Now, the planting of the flag and the disrespect is something else. And, you know, this goes right back. This is one of the things that always kind of bugged me when I was in college football and watch it now, probably college athletics completely. Hey, folks, players, we got video. You do anything like trying to plant a flag, going out to the middle field, stomping, trying to do anything to the players, we got video of it, and we're going to suspend you. But it gets right back to what we were talking about so many things that the NCAA and coaches could do. Just it's common sense. You know, it's like when we go back and talk about the communication, helmet communication. Pretty simple thing to do. All they got to do, NCAA comes out, hey, you go out, number one, you even try to plan for it. We're going to suspend you for a game, two games, maybe a whole season. That would end that stuff. They let it go on. So simple to fix so many things, and they just simply refuse to do it from an administrative standpoint.
This is Coast to Coach with former University of Tennessee defensive coordinator Doug Matthews and former NFL defensive coordinator and head coach Dave McGinnis, driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. In Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a rideshare. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
At Great Clips, they know you got a lot going on, just like I have. That's why they save my haircut details and clip notes, so I can get the same haircut as the last time whenever I want. No stress, no worries, no questions asked. And with 60 salons in the Middle Tennessee area, it's easy to find a Great Clips location near you. I've been a client of Great Clips for over 10 years, and if you're looking for a great cut, simply download their online check-in app today. Great Clips. It's going to be great.
Pay the order of hope, promise, tomorrow. For years, the Tennessee Lottery has written some pretty big checks, but it turns out that our biggest winner continues to be education. In fact, we've raised more than $7.5 billion and provided more than 2 million scholarships and grants for Tennessee students. Learn more about how lottery dollars are making a difference at tnlottery.com. It's game-changing, life-changing fun.
Hi, I'm Dwayne Hardy of Forklift Systems. Whether you're a big-time college coach or run a business, to be successful, you need five-star talent. It's also true for your heavy lifting equipment. Forklift Systems will perform a free productivity, safety, and cost analysis of your fleet. We'll identify your MVPs and what you need to trade or cut. If you're not constantly improving, your competition is. Win championships with your customers. Visit ForkliftSystems.com today.
Tennessee Vanderbilt lessons as we wrap up the regular season. Next week, by the way, we'll look at the season lessons for the Vols here on Coach to Coach. Dave McGinnis, walk us through the X's and O's of what happened on that opening kickoff for Vanderbilt.
Poor lane discipline. Poor lane discipline. You've got a lane that you're going to be in, especially when you're running down the field. Then you squeeze to the ball, but you squeeze to the ball with gap integrity, just as you do on a run defense. And then you everybody has a job to do. So what happened was, they followed and they folded too quickly. The ball was to the defensive, the cover team's left. Everybody folded in. They folded in way, way too far. They vacated the perimeter away from where the returner went. And all of a sudden, he hits an open field with nothing in front of him. You've also got a safety, and the safety has to stay deep enough to where he can play to both sides of the return. The safety got caught up in there. It was just poor coverage discipline.
Just poor fundamentals. Mac hit it right on the head. And you know what? You get a little complacent on a coverage team now. What have we seen all year long? We've seen players just run down the field because the kicker kicks it either into the end zone or out of the end zone. Almost every single team makes a fair catch where they can get it on the 25 or let it bounce for a touchback. But that young man, the returner, would not have been down, Mac, if they were playing one-hand touch out in the schoolyard. No one was even close to touching him.
But Tennessee's problems didn't stop there. First offensive possession, Dylan Sampson, who has been all everything for this team, another turnover.
We mentioned those first 5 minutes. Kickoff return for a touchdown. Tennessee gets the ball back. Second play, they fumble. Then they get they're down 14-0. Now they get for their second offensive possession, down 14 points, driving the ball, and they get a holding penalty to stop a drive. So that's what gets you beat. Mistakes, poor coverage, penalties, those are the things that get you beat.
Well, the Vols rebounded from that, though. I mean, we talk about the rebound. We talked about that they showed poise. Dylan Sampson, he has been the engine for this football team offensively the entire year. It shocked me when he fumbled. They chainsawed it right out of there. But they rebounded. They rushed 47 times for 281 yards after that. 178 by Sampson. It was a mistake, but it wasn't deadly.
I think one thing about Sampson is this, that he went like 250-some carries, not plays, but carries, without fumbling the ball, and now he's had three of those this year. A couple of them, good defense. Again, you mentioned the chainsaw, getting it out of there. Here's one thing that's changed, Mac, though, in college ball, and I think pro ball also, is that with now them being able to push the pile, which used to be a penalty, linemen come up and push the pile, there's many more opportunities for that defense to keep reaching in there and digging that ball out of there. So you really got to have great protection on that. That other hand over it or gripping and pulling the ball inside, that's part of it too. Having said that, this guy's a great ball carrier, runs with a good body lean, and had a big mistake in that one. But again, you got to give Vanderbilt a lot of credit for, as you mentioned, ripping that ball out of there. That's one thing that has changed so much, Mac, in coaching since I coached, was in practice, the defensive guys are always working on clawing that ball out of there, pulling that ball out of there. And we see much more of that now.
But a coaching point on that day, because you also see where people are so working so hard to rip the ball out that the guy gets away. They're not tackling him first. So what's your teaching point on that?
No, here's the coaching point. First man in, secure the tackle. Second, third, fourth man in, rip it out.
Simple as that. What was Tennessee's game plan on offense, Doug?
Well, talking about being simple, it was really simple. Two deep secondary, shell back there, two deep, going to run the football. Mac mentioned last week, before we were talking about this ball game, the Vanderbilt-Tennessee game, you know, you can't sit back in a two-deep shell and stop a good running game. Well, Tennessee's got a good running game. And then on the other side, when they get out of that, go to a three-deep or man coverage, and to stop the run, Tennessee was running the ball so well, they had to bring one of those safeties down in the box. Well, then Tennessee goes to their passing game. Slant routes are difficult to cover. And that the middle of the field was wide open, and Tennessee took advantage of it. But very simple game plan and pretty simple for the quarterback. You look out there, Nico, is it two deep? Run the football. Is it three deep or man where you see him rolling down? Throw the football. Slant routes are going to be there, and they were there all day long.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you said that, Coach, because it was clearly a check with me situation. And it just count the box. And I thought Nico was very, very composed this ball game. He made good decisions with that. We'll get into some other good decisions that he made later on. But with that, he made really great decisions, because that's as simple as it gets sometimes, and especially in that ball game, count the box and then have a counterpunch for it.
Offensively, when you play the style of offense that Tennessee plays, spread them out. It's easier, never easy, for a quarterback to see the type of coverage that you're in. And really, you don't have to worry, as a quarterback, and this is where Nico's really grown, you don't have to really worry about, as a quarterback, what the up front's doing. You need to know what the secondary is doing. The line's going to take care of what the up front is doing. And it's pretty simple to see a two deep, a three deep, or with the check with me's and those types of things, seeing if they're going to some type of man coverage. What do you expect when you get man coverage? Probably some type of blitz. But he has grown so much in that area. It seems like I've been saying this after the last three or four ball games, but I think he is getting better every single game. Opponents have something to do with it, surely, but he's getting more comfortable. He's getting more aggressive. And he's got keeping his poise on a lot of things. He's a very, very good quarterback right now.
Well, he also made some really good run reads, Coach, on the decisions when they were running the football, where to pull it or to hand it. I thought he made excellent decisions then. And basically, he had the Vanderbilt defense on their left foot with that. Once he came out of there with a true RPO look, he was making really, really precise and correct decisions on when to keep it himself or when to hand it.
Vanderbilt, I thought, played well, but just quite frankly, in the second half in particular, they just got worn out. And Tennessee got stronger running the football. That's where the majority of their rushing yards came in the second half. Again, I thought Vanderbilt played well, but Tennessee's offensive line second half just really manhandled Vanderbilt's defensive line.
Well, let's stair step on these thoughts a little bit here. They were able to, the Vols were able to get the receivers involved in this game because of what we've just talked about. Thornton, Brazel, Matthews, all those guys, there was 11 combined catches, 3 touchdowns, 2 of them by Thornton, 18 total catches for 256 yards. They had an 86-yard long. They had an explosive of 86. Did an excellent job of getting the receivers involved in this game.
And you mentioned Thornton. You know, listen, every team, this is a 12th game. 12 games into a season, everybody has players who are playing with some type of pain or injury or something. not a serious injury. But and Thornton is one of those. Having him back healthy, though, he's the guy that they counted on being able to stretch the field. He's got good height, 6'5". He's a good combat catcher. Back healthy again, that bodes well for Tennessee going forward. But in this particular game, really fought through those injuries and played exceptionally well.
Well, that has to continue now in the postseason, too. I mean, and you're going to hear us talk about this as we do these games coming up, about how important route separation, catch the easy ones. Once you get to the postseason, you've got to do the mundane things correctly for receivers. That's catching the easy ones. Win the 50-50 balls. Those combat catches that Coach just talked about, you're going to have to win it. You're going to have to make it 75-25 with the way that this offense works down the field. And because you're going to throw the football, and you're going to have to throw the football once you get into the postseason.
The opening kickoff return, not the only lesson on special teams. First, there's some good. A great punt leads to points.
Well, Jackson Ross, the punter, and the coverage team has really done an excellent job in one particular area, and that is the old pooch punt, the kicking the ball inside the 20-yard line, the hidden yardage. You know, there's a big difference between downing the ball on the 5 and it going into the end zone. One, you get them backed up. The other, you get it on the 20-yard line. Tennessee only had one punt. It was only for 36 yards. Well, that didn't seem like much. Well, it punted it. It was downed on the 4-yard line, and, of course, that set up a safety, which got Tennessee the ball back on a kickoff on that. But Jackson Ross has really been exceptional on this. There's an art to pooch punting, and the good ones get it where that ball hits and kind of has a little spin on it and comes back. And it's an art that very few punters can do. This young man is excellent on it.
Well, it's like hitting a 60-degree wedge in golf. I mean, you want it to spin back. The coverage team has to be involved in this too. But what we're talking about in the grand scheme of things, and we talked about the postseason coming up, field position metrics are huge. And that is a big flipping field position. If you don't have success offensively and you have to punt, then flipping field position, huge.
Young punt returner in Boo Carter, very talented. Three punts hit the ground, and the hidden yardage that we talk about was big on that. Now, I talked to the Tennessee coaches after this, just ask about that, and the only comment they gave me, well, they gave me a couple other comments, but I won't get into those, was that was more of a coaching problem than it was a player problem. So I'm assuming by that, Mac, they probably said, hey, let the ball hit the ground. We're going to get the ball back. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but again, that was the explanation I received from that.
Well, you don't want to give up yardage like that. And you know, going into ball games, I know they do this. You know, every special teams coach does this. You scout the other team's punter, you scout his range, you scout where you need to sit the feet of your returner. And so you don't want to let the ball. The more the times the ball hits the ground, the more yardage you're going to lose.
That kickoff coverage we talked about, there was one for the touchdown, but then in the second half, there was also a big second-half return that was negated by a penalty on Vanderbilt on that. You know, and one thing, again, a lot of young non-starters on the coverage team. Very few are returned, but, again, a good lesson for those young men. And, hey, every play is a big play.
Play calls. Official calls. Wrong calls. We break it all down. Driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. This is Coach to Coach.
Hey there. I've been hired by the Tennessee Lottery to celebrate every time there's a
woohoo!
A winner across the state. Truthfully, it's a little more work than I expected. I had no
woohoo!
Idea that Tennessee Lottery players win an average of $3.6 million every day. That's
woohoo!
A whole lot of moolah. So play today for your chance to win
woohoo!
Big. The Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun. Please play responsibly.
Woohoo!
You know, starting to save for your future doesn't have to be difficult. Let Wilson Bank and Trust help tone up your financial goals this year. Our certificates of deposits or CDs can help your money work harder with our competitive rates, earning you more than ever before. WBT checking options allow you to earn rewards you can really use, like a high interest rate or cash back on check card purchases when you meet some e-banking qualifications. Visit your closest Wilson Bank and Trust office or online at wilsonbank.com to get started today. Member FDIC.
When it's time for the big game, big fans need big TVs. And at Double Dogs, you can even satisfy big appetites. With choices like black Angus burgers, wings tossed in homemade sauces, and dog bowl nachos, well, Double Dogs will make sure you get the fuel you need for lunch, dinner, or even a post-game snack. So whether you have two legs or four, you can cheer on and chow down at Double Dogs. Visit DoubleDogs.biz to view the menu and order online. Double Dogs, sit, stay, eat.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a rideshare. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
Coach to coach, examining the defensive lessons from the Vanderbilt game. Doug Matthews, Dave McGinnis, our coaches at the round table. As good a job as you will see by the Tennessee defense in bottling up a running quarterback.
It starts with the defensive front. Anytime you got to play plus one and you got a quarterback that is a designed runner with designed plays, it starts up front defensively. They did a great job up front of knocking them back. Shock and shed won the front. Now, when you do that, now your linebackers are able to fill appropriately, and they're able to fill quickly if your defensive line is knocking it back. The third-level safeties were really good cleanup guys, really good. So you look at it from a coaching aspect of it, you put it on the board, you had knockback, check. Set an edge, check. Swarm, check. No creases, check. That's how they did it.
Well, one good thing about the end of the season is you have 10, 11, in this instance, 11 games to look at your opponent. It was pretty clear what Vanderbilt liked to do offensively going into this ball game. Their quarterback was the leading rusher. That tells you a little bit of something on that. But Tennessee, in that standpoint, they really did. They kept Pavia under control, really took away what he likes to do best, which is really run the football.
Well, the number was 50 last week in our program as to what you felt like you had to do defensively. Rushing yardage to keep the quarterback under that rushing yardage to be able to control the game. He had 11 carries for 45 yards. They did a really, really good job of that.
And that impacted the passing game. You know, when you can't run it, you got to throw it. And Tennessee was the plus for Tennessee was – when Vanderbilt had to start throwing the football, it gave them a big advantage because of that front. And also, they've been playing so much better in the secondary pass coverage the last half of the year.
Well, we talked about a clear offensive game plan. What about defensively, Coach?
Well, really simple. Keep him in the pocket. Don't let him get outside. Make him throw the quarterback from the pocket and then get after his fanny on that. The ability, again, when your quarterback is your leading rusher, all right, and Vanderbilt made some plays early with their running back, but when your quarterback is leading rusher, you know where your focal point is, and that was the big thing in this game. Not only did Tennessee keep him in the pocket, make him throw from the pocket, Pavia throw from the pocket, they also really dominated that inside running game and took away what Vanderbilt offensively likes to do best.
Well, Carter, the linebacker, was the leading tackler, and he was flowing. He was filling those gaps. He was overlapping when the front was controlled. Excellent, excellent job from the second level by Carter in this game.
Yeah, this guy, Arian Carter, he's from right down the road here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Coming out of high school, he was injured as a junior and didn't play defense at all. He was a good running back. He was being recruited as running back. Senior year, really came on as a running back. And I've had the great good fortune for the last 40-plus years to watch linebackers play at Tennessee. Al Wilson, of course, is the best of that group. This young man has all the ability. He's just a sophomore. He has all of the ability, all the qualities, including a great desire to get to the football with bad humor. He's got a chance of being as good as Tennessee has had, and they've had a lot of really good ones.
Well, out there on the corner, McCoy made a great concentration interception in the end zone. Showed his former wide receiver skills, spatial awareness, concentration at the catch point. He went up. He played through the catch point, and then he won the red line, which we always talk about, and then he was able to concentrate on the ball, tipped it, coming back down to him. It was a great play.
One thing I've heard Coach Mack talk about ever since we've been doing this show over the years, combat catches, where both the offense and the defensive player, the wide receiver and the defensive player, have a chance to get the ball. This was a great example of a combat catch. Fought the ball pops up, and then, quite frankly, got a little lucky. The ball fell right in his lap. But combat catching and combat defending the catch is so huge now in this press man-to-man coverage, and McCoy has really become excellent at it.
Balls got off the mat after that 14-0 deficit and really just took the air out of Vanderbilt Stadium.
Second half, you know, you got 44 offensive plays for Tennessee, 24 minutes time of possession. Vanderbilt had 11 offensive plays. 44 to 11, Vanderbilt had the ball 6 minutes time of possession. Again, Mac, I don't know that I've seen many teams, but certainly a Tennessee team. Certainly this type of offense, Tennessee team, keeps the football that long.
Well, the team overall showed composure. We've said that word at the beginning of this show. Never panicked, never felt like the game was in danger of being lost, even after the 14-0 start. Vols were the stronger team. And when you watched it, and I watch it as a fan, you know, not only watch it as a former coach, you know, looking at some of the critical things that happened and looking at some of the dynamics of a game, but you never got the idea or even had the feeling that the Vols were in danger of losing this game.
What was Tennessee's advantage going into this game defensively? Well, it was their front six, four down linemen, two linebackers, and their corners being able to play man coverage. Both of those areas really performed exceptionally well, really the whole ball game, but especially the last 55 minutes of the game.
Well, the strength of this team has been this defense throughout the season. And the offense has had its moments, but the strength and really started to get it generated and things get off on the right foot early on in the season. This defense, especially up front, has been outstanding. And I agree with what Coach is saying about the corners. We talked about this early on when this season started, that these corners were more suited to this man-to-man system. They've proven it.
Amazing moments, special players, stories you may not know. Doug Matthews, Checkerboard Chronicle.
Today we're going to take a look at the game maxims that General Nealon started, well, roughly 100 years ago at the University of Tennessee. There's seven of them right now that's been whittled down over the years, but General Nealon did that. Coach Nealon did that. He had about 30 to 40 maxims that he talked about a lot. But before a ball game, he took one of these seven in particular and talked about them. Sometimes he talked about all seven of them. Let's hit those real quickly, and we're going to talk about the way that General Nealon, Coach Nealon, looked at this. Remember, Nealon was a West Point grad. What are West Point grads? They're engineers. He fought in two world wars, rising to the rank of general. Number one, the team that makes the fewest mistakes will win. What was he talking about on that? He wasn't talking about just a simple mistake, stepping with the wrong foot, jumping off sides. He was talking about mistakes that cost games. Again, kind of equating it to what he learned at West Point. Mistakes that cost battles. What would those be? Fumbled punts, throwing interceptions, making dumb, stupid penalties. Number two, maxim, play for and make the breaks, and when one comes your way, score. This was big with him. Remember, not a whole lot of scoring back in those days. You get a fumbled punt, you get an interception, you get a block kick. Offense, get in there and make a play. And then the third maxim that we'll talk about today, what happens with breaks when one comes your way? Score. What happens if the game of breaks go against you? Don't let up. Put on more steam. He taught his team through these maxims. Those are the first three maxims. We'll talk about the next four next week.
Driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Coach to Coach continues inside the coach's meeting room for real analysis.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life. to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a rideshare. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
There are a lot of physical therapists in Tennessee, and you don't want to go to a therapist. You want to choose the therapist that is right for you. This is Charles Davis. I had injuries in my playing days and valued the importance of a quality rehab program. I know and trust these folks, which is why I would choose Star when in Tennessee, and you should too. Their clinicians have world-class advanced training to make them great mechanics of the human body and to get you better fast. Find a Star location near you at starpt.com.
Fill the halls with shouts of winning, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Tis the season to be giving, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Instant games to friends and family, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Join the joyous cash prize carol, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la.
With top prizes up to $500,000, holiday instant games from the Tennessee Lottery make grand gifts. Find them at your nearest Tennessee Lottery retailer today. Please play and gift responsibly.
At Great Clips, they know you got a lot going on, just like I have. That's why they save my haircut details in clip notes, so I can get the same haircut as the last time whenever I want. No stress, no worries, no questions asked. And with 60 salons in the Middle Tennessee area, it's easy to find a Great Clips location near you. I've been a client of Great Clips for over 10 years, and if you're looking for a great cut, simply download their online check-in app today. Great Clips, it's going to be great.
Championship Saturday. Consider this. Every major conference title Saturday could be won by a new team to the conference. This is coach to coach. Iowa State and Arizona State meet in the Big 12 title game. Gosh, Dave, what about the job by Kenny Dillingham at Arizona State?
Well, I mean, people were wondering, how would you hire this young guy to give him a major job like that when he first came in there? I've got still got ties to the Valley out there because I was out there for 18 years. And so I know. Now, Arizona State, back in the day when Frank Cush was there, had one of the best NIL things in the world set up, and it wasn't NIL then, called the Sun Angels. Those dudes have kind of been hanging around, you know, and just waiting for a chance. Well, now that the NIL's there, it's a beautiful campus. You've got weather out there. It's a great environment. Look, Dillingham's an ASU alum. So they hire this young guy. He comes in there. People were doubting him throughout the season. But all of a sudden, he beats Utah. And then everybody starts to pay attention nationally. They were getting excited out there in the Valley about it. And then he goes and beats BYU also. He has done a tremendous job. They are on fire for this team out there. They were picked to finish last in the Big 12 this year. Picked to finish last. And he lost his best player, Jordan Tyson, with a shoulder injury. That's his top offensive player. He has done a tremendous job.
Iowa State hasn't won a conference title in football, get this, since 1912. SEC Championship kicks at 4 Eastern Saturday with a Georgia-Texas matchup. What do you expect in this rematch, Doug, will be different?
Well, first, both teams know exactly what the other team likes and dislikes. They have a game tape to look at on that. Talent level pretty much the same between these two teams. You look at both teams, they're very, very talented. You know, in that last ball game, Mac, neither team got to 300 yards offense, which is a little surprising to me. Both were held under 300 yards. First game, Georgia won 30-15. Beck had 3 interceptions in that game, and they still won. Texas had 3 fumbles in this game. So that's kind of it going in. But the big thing is, they know each other. Remember, Sark coached at Alabama for Coach Saban. Kirby Smart coached at Alabama for Coach Saban. They weren't there at the same time, but they certainly know the style of play that both teams want. I guess the thing, Mac, I'd say coming in this ballgame is there's not going to be any surprises. They all recruit the same type of players. They know what each team likes to do. Whichever team gets out there and executes in this ballgame, probably going to win it.
Well, I think it comes down to which quarterback plays better, because they both have got this. These are excellent rosters. They both got depth, and they can both play really, really. They can play shut them out defense. They both have explosive players on offense. I think it comes down to, Doug, whichever quarterback plays best in this game, it's going to be huge.
Yeah, because the inconsistent play quarterback has been the story for both teams really all season long. Saturday night at Indianapolis, Oregon battles Penn State. The Ducks have allowed just 12 sacks this season. Can Penn State get pressure?
Well, Ohio State could not, again. And again, the Oregon blocking unit is one of the best in the country. The left tackle is a junior. The left guard is a redshirt senior transfer. The center's a sophomore. He was homegrown there. The right guard is a junior. The right tackle is a redshirt senior transfer. And the tight end is a senior. And also, their quarterback, Dylan Gabriel, redshirt senior transfer, he can manipulate a pocket so well, and he also understands that he gets the ball out quick. A lot of these no sacks, no pressure, it's on the quarterback getting the ball out quickly. It's going to be a challenge to get pressure on this group.
Well, one thing that Penn State's been able to do, though, is get pressure. They had 32 sacks this year. That's a little over three a ball game, and they have another 45, 46 quarterback hurries on that. But offensively, and this will be the theme of almost all these championship games, is the play of the quarterback. Drew Aller doesn't get a whole lot of press, but he's a 76% passer. He's had 18 touchdowns. This team likes to run the football, Penn State. He's only had five interceptions. And, again, Aller, one of those players that can pull the ball down and run. What's been the theme of this season on this show? If you have a quarterback who is mobile, who can get out on the corner and run, and also pull down when pass protection breaks down and run, you have an advantage. Aller is that type of player.
Last meeting between these two happened in the 95 Rose Bowl. Also Saturday night, Clemson takes on SMU in the ACC title game. Tigers offense has struggled against the best teams they play, talking about Georgia, talking about South Carolina. What do you see in this SMU defense?
Yeah, I'm going to give you the people that make a big difference. Number 24, Kobe Wilson's linebacker. He's a senior. 44 solo tackles, three sacks, one forced fumble, two interceptions, 95 total tackles. This guy's an eraser back there. Kobe Wilson is number 24. They're really strong down the middle. Their safety, number 12, is Isaiah Wokobu, is a junior. 49 solos, three interceptions, three pass defense, 91 total tackles. This guy's involved in the game. He's also got half a sack. Don't blitz him much, but they're strong down the middle. Then their edges, the pressure they can get off of the edge. The first guy is number 58, defensive end Isaiah Smith. He's a junior, 6'4", 238. 29 tackles, 6.5 sacks, all right? The guy on the opposite side of him, number 6, Jafari Harvey, the senior, 6'4", 252. 6.5 sacks, 2 forced fumbles. They've got 37 sacks total as a defense. This is a really good pressure defense they've put together there at SMU.
You know, the SMU's only loss was to BYU, and that was in Dallas early in the season, 18-15. They won 9 games in a row. That's a darn long stretch on that in this first year in the ACC. Kevin Jenkins, their quarterback, again, excellent runner and an excellent thrower. 67% passer. He is the second leading rusher on the team, has the ability to make big plays throwing and with his leg. I think that will be, from SMU standpoint, the big key in this ball game.
It is the 10th ACC championship appearance for Clemson. So here we are in this postseason version of college football. I'm interested from you two of how do you think coaching has changed as we start this new era of college football? The NIL, the transfer portal, the playoffs. Has coaching changed?
You have got to embrace it wholeheartedly, because if you're going to be involved in big-time collegiate football, which this has become now, especially with the Power Four, and now the way this tournament is set up, it has completely changed the mindset of how you have to approach it. Now, how you coach it, there's a difference in coaching guys that you've recruited that have been with you the whole time, and difference in how you coach guys that you bring in to fill and plug a spot. All of those things, putting a team together, that dynamic has changed. But the coaches that embraced it the quickest and the universities that embraced it the quickest are going to have the most success.
Explain what you mean, Dave. How is it different in those two different groups of players you just described?
Well, if you homegrown a guy and you've recruited him, then you can bring him up in the way that you want to. If you get somebody in the transfer portal, it's like getting a free agent in the National Football League. They've been trained other places. You are getting them for a specific skill that they could add to your roster. But it's different putting him, because every football team has a different dynamic to it. In the locker room, in the way you do things, the goal is the same for every team. You're working to win a game, but the way that you do it, everybody does it a little bit differently. So if someone's been with you the whole time, they understand the culture of your locker room. Somebody you bring in from the back end, they have to be ready to put themselves into and accept that culture on a short-term basis. It's a big, big difference.
To that point, football is the ultimate team sport. But the two of you are the ones here in this group that understand what it's like to truly build a team. Do you think we as fans, do we have any understanding of that? Do we overestimate things like chemistry and how players get along and all of those sorts of things in trying to describe not only this new world of college football, but the way college football teams have always come together?
You can't overestimate that. You cannot. And it's a world I lived in for a lot of years, speaking in the National Football League. And you have to be able to do that. And here's who else has to understand it. Now that there's money involved, you're going to be paying players different amounts of money, and the players on the teams have to understand that. Even though Doug is making a lot more money than I am, I still have to be able to perform at a very high level if we're going to get there as a team. No, you can't overestimate that. And that, again, it goes to our previous question. That is up to the coaches, and it's the head coach, and then it's the head coach through the assistants, and then the culture that you establish, you have to be able to assimilate that, but you cannot overestimate it because it's critical.
Well, when you really boil it down, a football team is just like a business. It's just like an organization. And the same thing that makes organizations, businesses successful, you have to have a group of leaders, and then you have to have a strong team that's built around you. That's what a football team is. What's a little bit different is that group of the, quote, players, it's not only those guys, and if you really listen to the smart head football coaches, you got the 35, 40, 50 players that are going to be playing on a game. But so much of college football, again, you only play 12 days. The other part of it is practice, and there are young men in college football that don't get out on that field that have a huge part in the success, because they're the ones out there making the players, normally the older players, that are make them better by giving effort and making them better. So when you talk about a team, it's just not who's out there playing. It's just not the coaches. It's that group of players and assistant coaches and analysts behind them that all have input in making a team successful or unsuccessful.
That's critical. And everybody has their role. You have to have a culture as to where people embrace their role.
Get inside the huddle. Mickens, Matthews, and you. Coach to coach. Driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a rideshare. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
When it's time for the big game, big fans need big TVs, and at Double Dogs, you can even satisfy big appetites. With choices like Black Angus Burgers, wings tossed in homemade sauces, and dog bowl nachos, well, Double Dogs will make sure you get the fuel you need for lunch, dinner, or even a post-game snack. So whether you have two legs or four, you can cheer on and chow down at Double Dogs. Visit DoubleDogs.biz to view the menu and order online. Double Dogs, sit. Stay. Eat.
You know, starting to save for your future doesn't have to be difficult. Let Wilson Bank and Trust help tone up your financial goals this year. Our certificates of deposits or CDs can help your money work harder with our competitive rates, earning you more than ever before. WBT checking options allow you to earn rewards you can really use, like a high interest rate or cash back on check card purchases when you meet some e-banking qualifications. Visit your closest Wilson Bank and Trust office or online at wilsonbank.com to get started today. Member FDIC.
Hi, I'm Dwayne Hardy of Forklift Systems. Whether you're a big-time college coach or run a business, to be successful, you need five-star talent. It's also true for your heavy lifting equipment. Forklift Systems will perform a free productivity, safety, and cost analysis of your fleet. We'll identify your MVPs and what you need to trade or cut. If you're not constantly improving, your competition is. Win championships with your customers. Visit ForkliftSystems.com today.
The end of the regular season is here and a new condensed December schedule. Having coaching staffs a little busy. We've seen it this week. This is Coach to Coach. Doug, let's start with, we saw the early signing period start earlier this week. We'll break down the Tennessee recruits on our show next week. But having that move back, what was the purpose in that?
Well, signing day was the Wednesday after the last ball game, which, you know, it was December 4th. The transfer portal is going to open the Wednesday after this weekend's conference games now. So, really, you got the playoffs for the 12 teams that are going to be in it. You got bowl games for many of the others. But what really brought this about was is the fact that as you looked at the calendar, what coaches did not want to do. This is all really pushed by the coaches, head coaches and assistant football coaches, is that calendar, let's get that under control. The early signing dates there because the great majority of players, and just looking at who signed this week, you know, normally it's about 75-80%. About 90% of the Power 5 schools, closer to 95, signed all of their high school players. They may have one left some other way on that. But the big thing on this, Larry, on why the change was made, coaches overwhelmingly wanted it. So now they can start in January. You know, they know who's in the transfer portal leaving their team and who they could get in. They know who their high school players are coming. They can start working on 2025 instead of trying to finish up 2024.
Well, that's critical. And the thing about coaches, they're just like players. The thing that coaches want to know, what is the schedule? What is the deadline? Where do we fit in the grander scheme of things of putting this thing together? You can't have any overlap. The overlap that they were having was ridiculous. Now this helps, because at least coaches don't mind working, and coaches work really, really hard, but at least give me a delineation and a rule as to where this recruiting starts and stops, and then what I can depend on for this year and what I have to look forward to next year. The other thing I think we'll probably talk about now is the way this is going now, especially with the transfer portal, your personnel departments are going to grow because your coaches don't have time to do a lot of that other stuff.
You know, I thought it was interesting. The early signing day used to be almost a holiday for fans of college football, but the balloon kind of got popped on that this year, and it's in large part because those commitments, Doug, they just don't mean the same as they did 10 years ago.
Larry, you're so right. I mean, back when it used to be the first Wednesday in February.
Yep.
All right. It was such a celebration. I would say if you're just an average fan or maybe a little above average fan, you didn't even know there was a signing date.
Coach to Coach, driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. In Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Podcast the show now and catch up before kickoff, where you find podcasts. Coach to Coach.